Hello and welcome to the NRF1 podcast, Norfolk's home to Formula One opinion from the fine county. We're here to preview this year's Russian Grand Prix in its new early season spot. So it's a little bit sooner than maybe we've been used to, but we're going to preview it anyway. We've got loads of fun. We're going to catch up on all the F1 news and as well as the Prediction League too. Apologies for the delay with this podcast. I'm going to put it down solely to the London Marathon, which I ran at the weekend. I did run it all-ish. I didn't stop, but it was a shuffle at times. But I did complete it, and that was a very lovely way to spend a weekend, apart from all the pain and anguish. Here are two people who didn't do that over the weekend and probably enjoyed themselves much more. It is Kyle Cumbers and David Tillier. How have you spent your Formula One break, Kyle?
Mainly watching sport, really.
Yeah, more so, sport.
More sport, different sport.
Yeah. What sport?
Football, a bit MotoGP, that sort of thing, yeah.
Autosport are covering MotoGP now, aren't they?
Oh, yeah. A bit of pressure from motorsport.com, probably. But yeah, good. Congratulations on your marathon run.
Thank you for your sponsorship. £2,000, I think, which hopefully my employer Archon are going to match.
Just Carl on his own sponsors you £2,000.
Yeah, I know.
Carl, very jealous if you can't.
You could have put that into a Formula One team.
You got a reserve drive or something.
Yeah. You didn't win the sweepstakes, sadly, on my finishing time.
I was quite close there, wasn't I?
Yeah, good question. I'm not sure. Probably.
I think I went 4 hours 20.
Yeah, that was reasonably close. Yeah. I was kind of hoping I'd be quicker than that. But, you know, it was fine. For those interested, it was 4 hours 29 minutes 51 seconds. And I had to really sprint the last kilometre.
Well done.
Thank you, DT. How did you spend your F1 break?
I actually worked, I think, 9 out of the last 11 days.
Yeah!
I haven't done a great deal other than sleep and work, really.
But congratulations are in order, because you're now one step closer to being a fully-fledged lifesaver.
Yeah, I got my results back. I was waiting on results for an essay that I'd written, which would allow me to progress to the next stage, which is to go from a student paramedic to an emergency medical technician. But just to make things confusing, I will go back to becoming a student paramedic later this year when I go to university. So, yeah.
Just love the student life, don't you, DT? Would you, could you take that into a motorsport field? You know, could you, you know, be trackside?
Yeah, I mean, there's. I know some people who work at Snetterton for MSVR.
The Motorsport Vision.
Yeah, that one. Yeah, I know some people who work for them and do the paramedic stuff track side, as it were.
Awesome. Yeah. Wow, that would be cool. Well done. Congratulations. Aren't we all a merry bunch of of people doing stuff? Right, let's speak about some other people doing stuff, shall we? The latest Formula One news. We should start, we'll rattle through these really and see how far we want to talk about them. Bernie Eccleston still thinks women can't drive Formula One cars and it would be a disaster, to paraphrase him. Not really doing the sport much good, is it, Kyle, again?
It's not really doing the... Yeah, promoting, which I believe is his kind of role. It's not really promoting the sport too well. So
we were all talking about it, though, so that's great.
Probably.
I'm joking.
But he's not really... I don't know. Sometimes Bernie's all part of the big plan, maybe to push the women debate more, maybe. I don't know, maybe.
Yeah, to prove him wrong?
Possibly, yeah.
Are we giving him too much credit there, do you think?
It's just Bernie all over, isn't it? I think, you know, hopefully we'll just... We'll just let time take its course and nature will take its course and maybe we'll have no more Bernie.
Oh my God, we're literally waiting on him to die. Oh, poor Bernie. Poor Bernie. It's been a long two weeks really. Pirelli, we had the threat of them pulling out because they wanted a testing agreement in place so that they could actually provide these wider tyres from 2017. They've actually got a contract in place until 2019, but they did get that all agreed. And those wider tyres are going to look quite good, I think, aren't they? They're going to be wider, not the low-profile ones, sadly, which I really like the look of.
Yeah, I'm not too sure about the low-profile bit because they tested that last year, didn't they? And it looked interesting, but it just looked wrong. And I know it sort of equates more to road cars than the current setup does, but yeah, just looked out of proportion. But yeah, if we can go back to wider tyres, that'd be really cool, like the 70s. I remember, you know, when we watched Rush, you know, the 1976 season, and these ridiculously fat tyres, they just look cool.
They do, that is true. And you can see that from the film Rush most... Most definitely. I mean, you are a tyre aficionado, really, aren't you, Kyle? So having changed the sport single-handedly with the strategy calls. I mean, it's good. I'm glad also I've kind of worked out that the driver's issues with Pirelli was more about how they got their contract with Bernie as opposed to it being Pirelli, because I personally think they've done a really good job so far.
I think they've sort of done what Formula One asked. I can't remember the year now. Was it 2011? We all watched the Canadian Grand Prix and we thought, wow, tyres degrading, more pit stops. We thought, wow, this is quite good. So they came in, they've done that. I can understand the drivers because they want to push more, and that is good in a way, but if they're just pushing all the time, then they follow each other around.
You need
a bit of spice, and Pirelli are adding it, and especially this year with the new free compounds, it's adding even more. So
that's exactly the point, I think. If the drivers got their own way, you'd literally have a load of drivers going flat out, and it would be the dullest thing. So they need steering in the right direction, pun intended. Interesting bit from Williams, which I think you flagged up actually, Kyle, on Twitter, that their strategy tools aren't quite up to the standard of everyone else. If only it became apparent during races.
It does explain a lot. They've been in really good positions, I think Silverstone last year and probably Austria the year before, and they've just been sort of delayed their response and sort of waited for everybody else to make a move, and then they made the move and they were too late. So it does explain quite a bit, and hopefully they can update it. But I think this year they've been probably the best team regarding pit stop times, so I think they were worried about that last year, so they've improved that. So if they can improve their decision making and the whatever process they go through, then that's a step forward.
Certainly their aim is to improve all that. John Booth has moved from Manor to Toro Rosso, which I find interesting because Toro Rosso seem to have had things nailed down, really, this year. They seem to have done pretty well. John Booth obviously left Manor last year as part of all their changes. Decent move.
I did briefly see it. I haven't read much into it, but you know, John Booth seems like a fairly solid head. And like you say, I suppose Toro Rosso didn't appear to want for anything from an outsider's perspective. They've got solid results, they've got a solid car, you know, they're a solid B team, which is what Red Bull wanted to be. So I don't know what John Booth will bring to the team, if anything. I'm not aware of any gaps they had in the team, any need for additional skills. But obviously John Booth is a man of he's got a lot of experience, and it's definitely not going to hurt Toro Rosso at all. So
absolutely not, and that they seem in a much better position than Sauber. Their head of track engineering, Tim Mallion, has left after just 3 months. Of course, Mark Smith, once of this parish with Caterham, he left at the start of the year. It's all a bit of a mess at Sauber. Did you say, DT, that Philipp Nasse is at least going to get a new chassis then in Russia?
Yeah, I didn't catch the reason, but I think he's due to have a chassis change for this race. So I don't know, but there's no penalty associated with chassis changes, so are there, unlike gearboxes, and so it shouldn't affect his race. But yeah, a bit worrying if they've had to change it, because he didn't have an accident in the last Grand Prix, did he?
I don't think so. Well, no one retired. Yeah. So
just smashed into Hamilton at the start, wasn't it? That was about it, really. Yeah.
It's all a bit of a mess at Sauber. I mean, when you look down the grid, there's always a team you worry about, and it feels like Sauber is a team worrying about this year.
Yeah, there's constant rumours. There's even a rumour of Alfa Romeo buying it on, which would be quite cool.
That would be good, yeah. That's a good rumour.
Yeah.
I also saw there's right about a lack of spares as well for this weekend, and even the year before you had, four or five drivers all claiming to be a driver, and
they're still paying Guido van der Gardasch, I think, probably.
Yeah, it's not looking good at the moment for Sauber, and it is a team you worry about. Hopefully they can get it sorted, but yeah, at the moment they're sort of not really offering anything on track either, really. So, it's a big worry at the moment.
It's the most we've talked about them probably since the start of the season. So,
I think for me, I was going to say about Williams, they kind of almost seem to be nowhere. They're getting solid-ish results, but they just, when you watch the coverage, they don't seem to be anywhere. And Sauber kind of have the same thing. You kind of almost, you can get to the end of the coverage of a race watching it, and you could forget that Sauber were even taking part. You know, that some of the other midfield teams, you get to see some really interesting stuff going on, and there's some battles, and Sauber just, I don't know, just don't seem to exist. It's very odd.
I should say at this point, we're going to have some input from the Dats Life podcast soon. They're friends of the show, And they're going to hopefully be blogging for us and add a little bit of their Formula One views to the show, the NIF1 show, that is. We're trying to, you know, improve the show. You know, it's part of the thing. So, exactly, it's all about the show. So hopefully that'll be on its way over the coming weeks if I can get my act together. And that will be a great little thing in addition. Russia this weekend, we're going to talk about that properly in a moment. But one of the things that's going to come up in free practice is Red Bull are going to trial their aero screen, I think, which is their solution to the issue of head protection, I suppose, rivaling Ferrari's halo, which looked a bit of a mess. I mean, it's basically a windscreen attached to the front of the car, but I don't know how much protection it would offer from above, but offers a bit in front and it looks all right.
Yeah, I mean, the concept that Red Bull are going to run, I think, tomorrow in practice, it looks a little bit Airfix initially, but I think they've thrown it together fairly quickly. But from what I can see, the screen sort of protrudes further forward down the car so that the actual opening for the driver to get in and out of is pretty much unchanged. But it comes up above the driver's sort of helmet, or just to the top of the helmet. So any debris that might be flying forward would be deflected effectively, and it's quite a raked screen. So I think if we are going to go down the route of having something, it looks like possibly the best option. And I think if they do implement something like that, they could effectively say, right, okay, well, it needs to be this height, and there can be a couple of set pieces, and then the teams are then free to then design it how they like. So we could then have a bit of variation. So, you know, you look down the grid and you get a few different teams with a few different takes on the rules. So it's another thing that, you know, from a technological point of view, that could provide interest for us sort of looking in.
Yeah, I'm feeling like we're coming up with a lot of halfway measures when ultimately you either have an open cockpit formula or you stick it in a cockpit and that's that.
Yeah, this is definitely looks better than the Ferrari one, because that just looked awful in my opinion. And I do quite like the open cockpit, and obviously you want to get safety, but you got to find a sort of happy medium ground. And this all feels just a bit rushed to me. I mean, next year is coming in and we're end of April and we still haven't decided a way forward, so
that's more notice than we normally get, to be fair.
Probably, yeah. I'm not convinced, but I think it looks bad, but then you soon get used to these things. Mm. And also a bit worried about seeing which driver it is from the side of the track, but maybe if they can add a big bit of colour to define which driver it is, maybe that'll be better than the current system where it's pretty hard to define a driver.
Yeah, I think looking at the design, I think it isn't ideal, and like you say, it doesn't look great, but it's still better, I think, than the halo concept. But I think when we talk about closed cockpit formula versus open cockpit formula, if you look at things like LMP, yes, it's closed cockpit, and it's they are prototype cars, so they're not based on road cars, but they still have doors. So if it's upside down, you still get the door open. But if they went full closed cockpit and the vehicle's upside down in a gravel trap, how are they going to get out without flipping the car? And it all gets a little bit, and it confuses me a little bit. The Formula One has managed to improve safety immeasurably. But it's always should be an open cockpit formula, if you ask me. And most of the drivers will probably agree with that as well.
We won't have any tweets in social this week. Apologies, that's the London Marathon legacy again. But we will of course be back with that over the coming weeks, because we've had some great tweets and debating points from you all out there, and we really appreciate them. And we will certainly do that again shortly. Let's move on to Russia, shall we? As an interesting one, I saw a story where Red Bull and Haas have really been sort of stockpiling on their super softs for the race in Sochi. 10 super softs, and they're not really bothered with the other ones. I mean, certainly the medium tyre offered very little. We've got going to have some curious weather conditions in Russia, aren't we? It's going to be pretty cold.
Yeah, I'm looking at it, Haas have pretty much gone all super softs.
All out!
Yeah, the two sets of softs and one medium.
So they're only using super softs in qualifying, basically,
yeah.
Aren't they?
So, I saw might be a little bit of rain over the weekend. I don't know, but I'm not sure what the weather is. Is it cold in Sochi this time?
18 degrees. I've had some correspondence from Richard Baxter, so I think he said it'd be about 18 degrees C, which is colder than most races are going to be this year, which will have a funny effect on the tyres, surely.
Because also, I think it's a quite low grip track as well, so maybe they'll be struggling to heat up their tyres. So we shall see. But yeah, it's definitely super soft dominant, isn't it? So yeah, I don't know if maybe we'll just have a one stop. Maybe it won't affect the tyres at all. We'll just have a one stop, or they'll just go all flat out. Free stop. You never know.
Well, I mean, clearly, most of the only the two Manor cars are the only two that have got two sets of medium tyres for the entire weekend. So by that case, no one's going to do any running on the mediums through any free practice. I assume it's how it works. And they're literally going to bung on a set of mediums if they need to during the race, which, I mean, I suppose was kind of the problem in China, because they did that and they went, oh, it's not... We don't know what it's doing. It's not working as well as we thought, because they hadn't really had a... go. I mean, it's quite interesting how it sort of funnels down the strategy possibilities.
Yeah, it's quite interesting. I mean, I can't remember from the last races at Sochi. Have you had races, or is it a race? I can't remember.
Two.
Yeah, I thought it was two. Yeah, I can't remember how the entire strategy sort of played out, and what was seen to be the favourable tyre at the time. So it'll be interesting to see how the teams use their allocation. I do love this whole three tyre allocation option, because it does bring in a bit of not jeopardy, but brings in a bit of variation and gives teams options. Going back to what we talked about Pirelli, actually, I would personally like to go back to a two tyre manufacturing option as well, because I did enjoy at the time, you know, the fact that some tracks would be more of a Michelin track and some would be Bridgestone, or you know how it was that back then. So it was quite interesting to see the different tyre compounds and actually have competition between the two tyre compounds. That would be quite interesting.
I think I quite like that, as long as there is competition and you don't have one completely dominant and then you already know that half the field hasn't got a chance of... Mind you, I suppose at the moment we know that 10 out of 11 constructors haven't got a chance of winning the race, haven't we, pretty much at the moment? Maybe that's a bit harsh. Successive safety cars we've had in Russia, and there were two last year. Mercedes have been the only team to have won and stuck a car on pole around Sochi. It was, of course, the team of Kimi Raikkonen and Valtteri Bottas battling on the last lap, which is one of the highlights of last year, I thought. And as you mentioned earlier, Kyle, Sergei Sorokin will run in FP1 for Renault. Did you mention that before we started recording? I think you did.
I did, yes.
Sergei Sorokin, who was set to be one of the youngest ever drivers in Formula 1, but didn't get his Sauber seat in the end. So he will be running for for Renault in FP1. So another Russian at least getting some track time. Of course, Daniel Kvyat will be carrying the flag at the weekend.
Yeah, for Sorokin, was it Sauber? I think he was linked with a driver, one of the many drivers. I think he was very young at the time and didn't really look like he deserved to go, but I think he's had quite a successful GB2 season last year, so yeah, it's a good opportunity for him for a possible drive next year. And Kvyat, hopefully he can, for him, obviously good race in China and the home support, and obviously it'll also be good for the race there if Kvyat does well, because more crowds there hopefully, and because you think Russia's obviously a huge country and probably should have a race in Russia, so anything that can help that cement itself on the F1 calendar is all good.
Absolutely. As I said earlier, Richard Baxter got in touch over email. He couldn't make the podcast tonight, but he said that Sochi could be more interesting now it's earlier in the calendar. As he said, forecast is about 18 degrees C, so it's a question of whether the tyres will be better or worse in those conditions. Most important weekend for Red Bull, he says. Can they keep the good form going and actually challenge at the top? Who would it be the most important weekend for you, DT?
I mean, I couldn't say anything other than Hamilton, I think. You know, I think it's got to be most important weekend for him, because effectively we've only really got two title challenges, unless, you know, something amazing happens to Ferrari later in the season. But I think given the current way things are going, I think we're going to have another Mercedes world champion. But Hamilton, as he's quite rightly said, has no jokers left now. He this is it now. He's got to start clawing back those points. So yeah, big weekend for him.
No driver that's won the first three races of a season has not gone on to win the Drivers' Championship, I believe, is the stat.
So it's looking good for Rosberg. But yeah, I mean, it's got to be Hamilton for the most important weekend. He's just got to, even if he doesn't win, he's just got to beat Rosberg. Because you've kind of felt it was a bit bad luck, and he'll win soon enough. But if he doesn't, then it's like, when is this going to happen? And then I think his confidence will drain a bit. But yeah, I think, like I said, he's not done that badly. The first three races, a bit of bad luck. He's 2 pole positions, so his form has been pretty good. He just needs just a bit of good luck.
A bit of good luck and the ability to start properly.
Yes.
I suppose those two things would sort it out. He to me looks like someone who's won the last two world championships, and he's very relaxed. He's like, I actually quite fancy chasing him, otherwise I'll get bored. So I'm just going to have a go at chasing him. The problem is, if he gets a bit too complacent, he leaves too much of a gap, and then he doesn't manage it. But there we go. Prediction time on the way, but first I should go through China because we haven't done it yet. There was the bonus predictions for those who took part, of course, as has been hashtagged, the Parfit prediction, which was name a driver and name a lap they're going to pit on. Mixed bag of successes. Those who did get it right received a pretty sizable jump in the standings, it must be said. But let's rattle through these, shall we? Rich had an average weekend. I don't really want to read them all out because there's so many of them now. His shout of 4 DNFs was a good one, but of course everyone finished the race, the entire classified finishers. He did say Kvyat would finish ahead of Ricciardo in the race, and Haas would have two top 10 finishes, which was wrong. DT had incorrect top 3 for qualifying. Quite a tough one, actually. It was quite a tough week for you there. That two cars wouldn't make turn 2 on lap 1. I think they got close, but of course they all got round, as you feared. They all sort of kept skidding round and then just carried on. Vettel to pit lap 15. I think you were close. I can't remember them all. You might have been a couple of laps out with that one, but you got Rosberg winning the race, which was not an easy shout. Kyle, yeah, you had, well, you Hamilton did pit on lap 6.
Did he really?
He did.
Wow.
So, I mean, he did pit a lot, which helped. It was like every other lap, I think, at one point.
5, 6, and 7, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think so. And you got that Vettel would be second in the race. So a couple of little shining points there. I had a really good week for the first time. I said Rosberg would win, Vettel would be on the podium. I said Hamilton would be on pole, which was wrong, and Renault would get their first points. But I had Verstappen ahead of Sainz, and that Verstappen would finish in the top 8. Red Bull really surprised me. I thought they'd really struggle with their clock watch engines, but as it happens, they're actually quite good. Steve Rust had an average weekend. His big one was getting a top 10 at least for Toro Rosso. Tim Eyre went big with the whole top 6, which he had Grosjean and Ricciardo in 5th and 6th, and Hamilton in there. I mean, a lot of these predictions were made before Hamilton got his gearbox penalty, which just wasn't great. He said again Hamilton to pit on lap 6. You and Tim Eyre both said the same lap.
Not really.
And driver, unless I've written it down wrong, you both said Hamilton to pit on lap 6, so you both got that one right. A few weirdy ones that I tend to ignore, but Perez to lose his front wing on lap 1, I'm pretty sure that didn't happen. And Verstappen to swear on the radio. I mean, I'm sure he did. We probably just didn't hear it. Kieran P. Cousins, he was in touch. A couple of good ones here because he was going on about the Drivers' Championship. Ricciardo to stay P3 in the Drivers' Championship was a good shout. The two Williams to finish ahead of the two Haas in Q1. In qualifying, at least one Ferrari-powered engine wouldn't finish, but of course no one didn't finish. It was really nuts for that. Bottas to pass Hülkenberg and Kvyat in the Drivers' Championship, which was half right, because Kvyat, of course, put in a stellar race. Johnny Parfit, he went for the big one, the top 10. Sadly, he only got the top 2 right, but 2 Toro Rossos in the top 10 in quali was correct. Wets to be used in one session. I'm pretty sure that wets were used early on, weren't they, in practice? It was such a long time ago.
Yeah, I'm sure it was. I think even qualifying, possibly.
Yeah, I've given you a turn away, Johnny. I'm sure you'll tell me if I'm wrong. I'm sure you will. And you did predict Vettel to pit lap six, which you were worried it was a bit too late, but I thought that was okay, because that was a pretty random guess, really. It's a bit like, I let you off on this occasion, put it like that. And Sam Todd, he had a pretty good week of it. Vettel to start P1 wasn't one of the ones that he got right, but two Red Bulls in the top eight in quali was a great shout. And a little unlucky with no driver to use the super softs during the race, because I think a few things kind of scuppered all that. But there we go. So that basically leaves the standings. Kyle, you're on the summit. You've overtaken Steve over the top weekend. Tim is third, Sam Todd fourth, Johnny's fifth. I'm up to sixth, Ped and Josh seventh and eighth after a couple of barren weeks. Kieran is then ninth with DT and Rich pulling up the rear. Poor old DT, poor old Rich. So let me read out Rich's predictions he's done in his own absence. He has predicted for Russia that Perez will do the least amount of pit stops, that both Toro Rossos will finish in the top 10, that Kvyat will be in the top 5, at least one safety car will be out, and at least one safety car period he has written, so I guess we'll count the virtual safety car in that, and McLaren will have at least one car in Q3, and for fun, Raikkonen to pit lap 17. We don't have to do these lap ones this week unless you want to. DT, do you want to go first?
Yeah, I actually have some prepared that I
get
wrote,
to get serious now.
That I wrote about 2 minutes ago. I'm going to keep it simple because, well, I'm doing terribly, so I'm trying to claw back some points. I think Hamilton's going to get pole. I think he's going to come back with a vengeance, but I think Rosberg will be very close behind. So Hamilton first, Rosberg P2 from quali, and I think Vettel's going to get P3 because he seems to have the pace. When it comes to the race, I think I'm going to bet against form and say that Rosberg's going to have a DNF.
Oh, kudos point there.
So but definitely betting against form. I think Hamilton's going to take the victory. And then Vettel and Ricciardo are going to make up the podium. But I'm not going to say in what order. And I think we're going to have two safety car periods.
Oof. Definitive.
That's what I'm going with.
That's his job done. Kyle, the leader, the oracle, defending champion, the lot.
I'm going to go for a Rosberg pole, but then Hamilton will win the Grand Prix. As it is Russia, I'll go for two Red Bulls in the top 5.
Oof.
I think they'll have a pretty strong weekend again. I think both Renaults will be out in Q1, unfortunately. Finally, I'll go for a perfect prediction. I'll choose my driver now. As he is one of the main men of the NRF1, I'll go for Julian Palmer, and he will pit on lap 14. And that'll do, I think.
Job done.
I was thinking of a Putin prediction, but I'll leave it.
don't tempt fate.
He's gonna do at least one lap on horseback with his shirt off.
I'd love to see that. Okay, well, I will say Daniil Kvyat will finish in. I think he will finish outside the top 5 this week. I think it'll be a come down for him. I think Daniel Ricciardo will finish ahead of him as well. I think that Lewis Hamilton has to win this race, and I think he will win this race. But I then maybe think that Seb will be second as well, so Nico won't finish in the top 2. I don't think Renault will get their first points this weekend, because I genuinely feel they're in trouble. And I think Haas will fail to score points again as well, because I think maybe the bubbles burst a little bit there and they're just making a few rookie errors. Sorry, Kyle. I'm sure they'll grow out of it. As we talked about how Sauber at the start of the show, I'm going to say that Philippe Nasr's chassis is going to propel him to a top 13 finish. There you go. What a man.
So potentially he's going to achieve nothing then.
Well, it's probably their best race finish of the season if they do that. So there we go. Job done. Gents, happy, happy. Everyone's happy. Brilliant stuff. Okay, we'll better wrap this up now. We will be following all the action in Sochi, of course. Kyle's betting tips are primed and ready to go on the website, so keep an eye out for those. I appreciate this is quite a late pod, so any predictions you want to get in, they need to be in before the start of FP1. I'm very sorry, but they are the rules. There we go. If you can manage it, do it. If you're already too late and I haven't even got this out in time, I apologise. But we will be back on the other side of Sochi to review all the action, back with another bumper panel. But and of course I should plug all the stuff. We've got the website nrf1.uk for blogs and Kyle's tips. That's where you'll find those. The Twitter handle is @thenrf1, and of course facebook.com/nrf1podcast. You can always email us, get in touch, give us your thoughts, nrf1podcast@gmail.com. job done, gents. Thank you so much. Thank you all for listening. We'll see you on the other side of Russia. Enjoy the fun and games, and keep an eye out for Vladimir. Bye for now.